A coronavirus flashpoint, face coverings. The recommendation of the World Health Organization, the US CDC, and other public health agencies is unequivocal. Face coverings, masks, help prevent the spread of COVID-19. In Maine, Governor Mills recently tightened the rules around facial coverings, requiring them for all retail establishments in Maine's coastal counties and larger cities. But many people bristle at the rules and refuse to wear a mask, and masks have become a politically polarizing symbol nationwide. I'm Jennifer Rooks. What's the psychology behind this resistance to masks? How well do face coverings work anyway? As the research around COVID-19 continues, what do we know and not know about their efficacy in halting transmission? And why might some people not be able to wear a mask? Maine Calling is next. But first, this news update. Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The nation is divided over many issues, one of which is wearing a mask. Today, we'll discuss the medical benefits of face coverings and how guidelines are being followed and enforced in Maine. And we'll explore why this little piece of cloth has become such a divisive symbol. Joining me, Dr. Nirav Shah. He is the director of the Maine Center for Disease Control and Prevention. And also Stephanie Kelly Romano, who's an associate professor and chair of rhetoric, film, and screen studies at Bates College and has a background in political communication. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you encountered any altercations over wearing face coverings in Maine? Do you have questions about how mask guidelines are being enforced? And why do you think this has become such a divisive issue? You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Dr. Shah, you know, we've been talking about doing a Maine Calling program on masks or face covering for several weeks now, and it doesn't seem as though the discussion over this, the controversy, goes away. It just seems to be getting louder and more, more a bigger part of the news. This week, we see the president finally wearing in public a face covering. So I want to back up a little bit and have you start by explaining the governor's most recent order on wearing face coverings and what prompted that order.
Certainly, Jennifer, and thank you for having me back on. It's an honor to be able to chat with everybody today. A while back, over a month ago, the governor issued an executive order that required individuals, all of us, to wear face coverings when we were in public and in situations where physical distancing was not possible. That was quite some time ago. But what we heard after that was that notwithstanding the governor's initial executive order, individuals were still not wearing face coverings. The science tells us right now that because of the way that COVID-19 can spread, that is to say, before folks have symptoms, face coverings play an outsized role in protecting all of us from getting COVID-19. But we heard loud and clear that there were still concerns that individuals were wearing masks in areas where physical distancing was not possible, most notably in large retail stores, grocery stores, big box stores. So the governor's most recent executive order empowers those stores to make sure that before anyone is allowed in, they have a face covering on, and all the way up to the possibility of barring entry for individuals who don't decide to comply with the governor's prior executive order. So this most recent one was just an enforcement mechanism on top of an executive order that already required face coverings to be worn out in public.
And so what has changed? How is it being enforced?
The mechanism that we've chosen to go with here is asking stores at their level to make sure that before someone comes in, they are notified of the obligation to wear a mask. And if they decline to wear the mask, be offered different types of accommodations so that they can still undertake their shopping. We know that's necessary. Getting groceries is essential. But that they can still be provided an opportunity to get their groceries, maybe through kit pickup, or maybe having the store furnish a face shield if a face covering is not possible. And if the individual decides not to, then empowering the store to bar entry. The enforcement then happens between various regulatory or law enforcement entities and the store itself. So we've really made the store the nucleus of a lot of the enforcement activity itself.
Mm. Stephanie, I want to bring you into this conversation. In Maine and across the nation, people have become really divided over their views on wearing masks. How has this become such a polarizing issue?
Well, I think that's a really complicated question. And thanks for asking me to be part of this conversation. I think that there are a couple of things. I think the president's reluctance to wear a mask and his kind of ambivalence when he talks about them, and that maybe you should wear one, maybe you shouldn't, you know, it's up to you kind of thing, I think is troublesome. And I also think that people are associating wearing a mask with staying committed to the president and showing support for the president. And so to not wear a mask or to wear one would be disloyal to him. It is part of the problem. I also think that there has been a problem in the sense that when we think of masks, we oftentimes think of masks as things that protect us. We're not necessarily outwardly focused. And I think especially with this, we really are wearing masks in order to prevent other people from being infected. And that's just not a way that we typically think. And so I think the two of those things together are causing people to feel a little afraid about wearing one in public in terms of what are other people going to think and am I being disloyal to the president, coupled with I don't feel sick, so I am okay.
Mm. And I'm wondering why the president or others might be resistant. I'm wondering if there are deeper sort of cultural feelings about what it is to be strong and not weak. I mean, and related to, you know, when Gorbachev and Reagan were wearing hats or not hats or coats or not coats in the cold to project a certain image. Do you think this is all tied up together?
I think, you know, and I've seen, you know, toxic masculinity thrown around a little bit in conjunction with this, because evidently men are much more likely to not wear masks and women are more likely to comply. But I definitely think that there is this measure of strength that is being exerted. And it's a very performative thing with a mask, right? Because what we have is this mask is a symbol. It's a symbol of an illness that we don't know we do know what causes it, but it's a very scary, scary illness. And so to wear the mask is to acknowledge that it's real and it's really nearby me, or it potentially could be. And I think then in order to kind of display this courage or this bravado, it's I'm not going to wear this mask and I'm not going to wear this because I'm not going to get sick, you know. And so I think that definitely plays into it.
And Dr. Shah, I'm wondering too about this, the whole, you talk a lot about human connection and how important human connection is. A mask alters human connection.
It does. And it's understandable that folks who maybe came up in a world where masks were uncommon, the concept of now hiding part of your face can be it can be jarring for individuals. You can't see people talking. So I think on face value, masks are something different. But I think what I recommend to folks, and what I've tried to do myself in my own office and in my interactions with individuals, is try to make the mask a positive thing. I've talked about the reasons I wear a mask, not just because of scientific reasons, but because I think it's part of what we owe each other as a community. I also think there's a fundamental element of kindness and compassion that underlies wearing a mask. I don't know if the person that I'm in line next to at the grocery store has a child at home that's battling cancer or cares for an elderly relative. And so by wearing a mask, I'm showing them compassion and avoiding the likelihood that I infect them. I think a way that we can make masks the norm is to try to make it a positive type of reinforcement. So one of the things that I try to do in my office is that every time I'm walking down the hall and I see one of my coworkers wearing a mask, I thank them for doing so. Rather than trying to scold somebody for not wearing one, I always try to make the norm norm something as positive as possible.
Let me ask you about the very most recent research about masks and how protective they are. It almost seems, if you read through the most recent news articles, that if everyone were wearing a mask indoors, everybody were wearing a mask in grocery stores and hardware stores, at workplaces, that we would greatly diminish the incidences of COVID-19. Is that what you are seeing? Is that what your information is telling you, that this is really much more dramatically beneficial than we originally thought?
That's right. There are different models that project the possible number of individual infections that could be averted, and as a result, number of individuals who might be spared if we were all to wear masks, particularly in those instances where there's a high density of individuals for a prolonged period of time. The reason why masks have grown to be of outsized importance is a deeper understanding about the way in which the virus spreads. And one of the key changes in the science around wearing the masks or face coverings was the understanding that a large percentage of the spread of the virus happens before individuals start showing symptoms. With a lot of respiratory diseases, the time that you can spread it the most coincides with the time that you're the sickest. And by that time, most people are laid up in bed, like with the influenza virus. But with COVID-19, what we know now is a lot of the transmission occurs before people start feeling ill. And that's why wearing that face covering is a great way to protect other people, because you may not know whether you've got it.
Early on, you and many other public health officials were discouraging people from wearing masks. I know that we've learned so much more about COVID-19 since then, and just what you've just explained, that asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic people can indeed spread it. If you could go back in a time machine, would you change that recommendation?
Well, we're always basing recommendations on what we know at the time, as well as conditions at the time. Back in March before, or February, before a lot of the data around pre-symptomatic transmission came out, the other thing that was simultaneously happening were serious shortages of masks among healthcare workers. So there was also a competing concern to make sure masks were preserved. There still remains concerns out there about making sure that when folks do wear masks, they don't touch their faces and they don't use the mask as a potential excuse to avoid gathering in large groups and things like that. So it's always a balance, but this is a good example of when scientific understanding changes, the policy and public health recommendations that adjoin that do change as well.
Stephanie, I want to return to you, Dr. Shaw, or one of you mentioned, I can't remember who, something that I've also read in surveys, that men are less likely to wear masks than women. Also, the more money you make, the more likely you are to wear a mask, the less money you make, the less likely you are to wear a mask. Is this, Stephanie, does this fall along very predictable lines, or is this one of those things where there are people in different camps who are resistant to wearing masks?
I'm not sure that I really know that, Jennifer. I do know that most people, it seems, are actually willing to wear masks. And I think that a lot of times what happens is we hear a lot about the minority, or we hear a lot about this small group of, you know, anti-maskers. And so then their kind of presence gets heightened. But it does seem as though men are more likely to resist.
Why is this, Stephanie, why is this so hard? Why are we still talking about this in the middle of July?
I think that, again, you know, it's a confluence of a bunch of different things. I think the virus is very, very scary. I think that the fact that we have been unable to really control it at a level where we can resume normal life, or at least resume normal life in the ways that we're accustomed to, makes people squirrely. I think that the isolation and the lack of physical contact and the individual sacrifices that people have necessarily had to make, I think all begins to wear on people psychologically. And the other thing is that we're not necessarily in this although I don't know that that's true, but I think that sometimes we can, it seems as though we're not in this together, right? That it, there's an us and there's a them, when really they're just humans trying to survive a really tough time. And so when we can start from that place and talk about what is best, then I think we start to kind of get out of this fractured space.
I'm going to go to a couple questions from our audience, since so many are coming in. This is an email from Candace. I'm curious about the recommendations regarding face coverings for people outside of your immediate household. I have a 17-year-old son who has a girlfriend, and of course he wants to see her, but we're somewhat uncomfortable because she isn't, quote, in our bubble. Are we being too cautious asking him to wear a mask when he sees her, if they will be closer than 6 feet apart, as well as saying no to hugging or kissing? He sees a lot of his friends engaging in this behavior with their girlfriends and boyfriends and is questioning why we're being so strict. I would love to be able to share a straight answer with him from a reputable source. Dr. Shaw.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, the straight answer is that any individual who is concerned should be wearing a mask or a face covering. That applies to the 17-year-old who understandably wants to spend time with his or her friends and girlfriends and boyfriends. Wearing a face covering is one of the surest ways to ensure that that 17-year-old doesn't pick up the virus and then perhaps spread it on to parents and grandparents. Getting the 17-year-old to comply with that may be a challenge, but compliance is a challenge all around. And I think whether you're 17 or 70, asking folks to do what we know is right for their community is really the best way to go about doing this. And rather than making it a command, I think appealing to the fact that 17-year-old, again, may be interacting with other individuals who we don't know what their medical conditions are. That's the best way, I think, to go about making the case for wearing a face covering.
Yeah. And would you recommend a conversation with both of them seriously about who they are seeing on a daily basis, who is in their bubble, how big their bubbles are?
I think so. I think we all have to take stock in who we're interacting with on a day-to-day basis. For right now, the virus is still with us. And so having a conversation about the benefits of wearing a face covering and the risks of not doing so and what that may mean for other loved ones that are in the bubble, that now is a good time to be doing that.
All right. A couple related posts on Facebook. Allison writes, I work for a large chain pharmacy and have seen both masked and unmasked people fight each other verbally and almost came to blows in public settings. I'd really appreciate it if everyone could urge the use of common compassion in this time, and it's not just one side throwing the first verbal altercation. And Molly writes, today I was at the grocery store, and as I was leaving, I witnessed a confrontation regarding masks. There was a family from out of state who was loading items into their van, and a woman started shouting at the mother and demeaning her for not wearing a mask and for being from away. Can you talk up about ways to start these conversations with strangers in a more positive way? Stephanie, do you want to suggest something?
Sure. I think, I'm always heartened that we want to talk about it in a more positive way and to kind of frame it as helpful. And I love Dr. Shaw's idea about thanking people for wearing masks and being careful when we do approach someone else that we are we're not making assumptions about them just because, just because they're driving an out-of-state car. Maybe it's a rental. Maybe they are from here. Maybe they've quarantined. We don't know the circumstances. And so I think to approach people and to simply ask if you can be helpful and if, if they need anything. And I think especially we'll have someone on later, I think you had said, Jennifer, who'll talk to people who can't wear masks or face coverings and how to respect what they need to have or accommodations that they might need. But I think certainly with just someone that you see at the grocery store or whatever, to maintain that social distance and then to ask them if there's a way to be accommodated.
And Dr. Shaw, before we go to a break, anything to add to that?
I think Stephanie's exactly right. We don't know what other people are going through. And I think we can use that in a situation to appeal to others when we're asking them to wear a face covering. If you feel the need to approach somebody to ask them to do so, I think the way in which to do that is to start with an appeal to our common humanity and just ask folks, hey, you know, I happen to have if this is correct for you, I happen to care for an elderly relative and I'm really afraid of transmitting COVID to them. And it would really mean a lot to our entire community if everyone wore a mask. Would you mind doing so? And I think that's an easy script, and it appeals to everyone's our own shared humanity.
All right. Well, we are going to go to a quick break. We're talking about face coverings on Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Evergreen Home Performance, helping homeowners manage basement moisture problems with encapsulation and sump pump installation. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And Breakwater, offering summer day camp programs for ages 3 to 18 through August 21st. Enrichment.breakwaterlearning.org. For those of you counting on public radio anywhere, anyplace, the Maine Public app is your solution. Stream Maine Public Radio or classical, or just catch up on the news. The Maine Public app is available for both Apple and Android smartphones and tablets, and it also gives you access to many PBS and Maine Public television programs. You can easily find the Maine Public app in both the Apple App Store and in the Google Play Store, and it's free.
Welcome to Maine Public's This Is My Maine.
I'm from up in the St. John Valley. Between Van Buren and Madawaska is a little village of Lille, right on the Canadian border. My kitchen is 500 feet from the border. I absolutely love where I live. It's a little agrarian village, only 90 people, and I've got a project there where I'm restoring a former church, and I wouldn't have had that opportunity anywhere else. People are friendly. It's a bilingual area. I'm both Canadian and American, and being right on the border, for me, it's ideal. You certainly do know everybody, and everybody knows you. C'est donc de Lille, c'est ma Maine.
This Is My Maine is brought to you through the support of Eaton Peabody, the Maine Community Foundation, and the generous support of members like you. Thank you. Go to MainePublic.org to experience more of Maine Public's celebration of Maine's first 200 years. Happy birthday, Maine.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today, we're talking about what we know about the role of face coverings during the pandemic and how to react to people not wearing them. Joining me, Stephanie Kelly Romano, who is Associate Professor at Bates College, and Dr. Nirav Shah, who's the Director of the Maine CDC. So many calls coming in. If you want to be a part of the conversation, a brief email, please, to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Corey King, who is Executive Director of Southern Midcoast Maine Chamber of Commerce. Thanks for joining us, Corey. Is Southern Midcoast Bath, Brunswick, Freeport?
Yes. Bath, Brunswick, Topsom, Hartswell.
Okay, great. Yeah, you conducted a survey of customers in your part of the state and learned about their attitudes toward businesses and how they are addressing COVID safety. I understand it wasn't a scientific survey, but can you tell us what you learned? How are people, customers, and business owners feeling about wearing masks?
Well, thanks for having me. It's a very important topic. And actually, it wasn't just our area. We released this statewide, and we ended up getting about 3,000 respondents to this survey that was open for about 7 or 8 days. And so we actually broke down data by county, by age group, by people that knew someone with COVID and people that knew someone in the high risk. Biggest takeaways are, so, you know, good social distancing is good business. One of the very telling statistics for us was 25% of the respondents said that they have left a business they intended to purchase something at without purchasing it because they didn't feel safe in the store. An additional 25% said that they would leave a store if put into that position. So you're looking at 3,000 people. It's one of the largest surveys of Maine consumers that have been taken. And over half of them said that they have or they would leave a store if they felt unsafe. The next question was, would you not return to that business? And over 50% again was the response. And so one of the issues is business owners, you know, they're all struggling for business right now. Estimated economic losses are between 30 and 50% for all main businesses and higher in some industries. You need every customer you're going to get. Can you really afford to have a quarter of your potential customers walking out the door? So that was one of the big takeaways for us.
And something for a customer who's not wearing a mask to keep in mind, that if they go into a store without a mask, they may be hurting that business by turning, you know, making other customers leave. I'm going to read to you, if you don't mind, Corey, a Facebook post that came in because it's from a business. This is from the Winterport Boot Shop. We require customers to wear masks in our store. We have also asked employees to wear masks on the sales floor. However, we have experienced some pushback from employees, and only about 50% of customers wear masks. How can we enforce a mask policy when, one, customers claim constitutional rights to not wear a mask, two, an employee claims a mental disorder excusing them from wearing a mask and for which they cannot provide a doctor's note, and three, there have been multiple verbal and physical assault threats by customers to some staff and other customers. In addition, we offer complimentary masks, hand sanitizer at multiple stations, and have floor stickers and 6-foot distancing marked on our sales floor. We have also integrated a wear a mask message in our advertising. You can just hear the frustration. And Corey, what is the advice as a Chamber of Commerce that you give small businesses who have a story like this one?
Sure. And it's a story that we're hearing a lot. There's a few pieces to this. One piece is, as Dr. Shaw alluded to, there's a real community feel that you've got to put behind this. Our chamber is going to be rolling out a community initiative, because if we can get an entire community behind mask wearing and saying that they're in favor of that, then we can promote that to shoppers from around the state. Our survey also told us that people will travel, 2/3 of the respondents said they would travel 10 miles to shop in a safe community. Over 50% say they'd travel 25 miles. And a third said they'd travel over 50 miles to get to a safe community to shop. I mean, those are staggering numbers. So I salute the business that's doing that. But if you have the entire business community in Winterport say, hey, we're all going to get behind and do this together, it's easier to approach a customer to say, hey, our community is doing this, because it's easier to ignore a state mandate or a federal mandate than it is your neighbors and your friends. So I think that's one way to do it. The other thing we need to look at, though, is from our survey, 21.4% of people said, if they force me to wear a mask, I'll go somewhere else. And that is a prevalent attitude out there. And there are people that are very passionate about that. I can tell you that from my open-ended responses. But the thing is, 79% didn't say that. And so to get back to Stephanie's point, we need to stop pretending that just because there's two sides, that the two sides are even. On one side, you know, as you go through our entire survey, there is a 70 to 80%, you know, promotion of social distancing, and 20 to 30% not. That's general. But we need to start pretending that 70 to 30 is really that even. And I know there's concerns in that 30%. But if you're a business, you need to tailor what you're doing to the 70% of customers. And the bottom line thing I would say is, a business is responsible for anything that happens within that business. So as a business owner, you have a right to say what you will and will not accept in your business. And that's going to upset some people, and that's going to turn away some people. But all the other customers that see you standing up for them, they're going to appreciate that.
Thank you so much for calling in. That was Corey King with Southern Midcoast Chamber of Commerce. Now calling in is Ellen Krajewski. She's CEO of Eastport Healthcare. Thanks for calling in, Ellen.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we've headed down east from the Midcoast. And tell us what you are seeing in terms of people's mask-wearing habits in your part of Maine.
Sure. Well, here at Eastport Healthcare, everyone coming into the health center, including staff and patients, everyone screened for symptoms and everyone is required to wear a mask, and that happens. Out in the community and the region, it's really a different story. Some are wearing masks, but many are not. There's a sense that in our rural coastal region, there's somehow we're somehow exempt from the pandemic because our numbers are low. There is somewhat in Eastport, there's a chamber, the stores are working together to implement masking, but still there's a lot of people not wearing masks in restaurants and so forth. Many people see masking as a partisan issue. In fact, my masked husband was at a window at lunchtime of a local hot dog stand, and he was placing an order, and some guy parking next to him jumped out of his truck and angrily shouted at him that all Democrats should be lined up and dragged through the streets. So this was, you know, he was just placing an order. So there's a lot of tension in the community, even though there's also some concerted effort to have people wear masks.
Well, Ellen, thanks so much for calling in. That's Helen Krajewski, CEO of Eastport Healthcare. And Dr. Shah, I want to know when you're listening to what Ellen is saying, how do you think we get that message through to those people who see this as so partisan?
Well, you know, I have two quick reactions to what Ellen said in connection with what you noted, Jennifer. The first is there are places where we all naturally find mask wearing, face covering wearing to be totally acceptable, like when you go to the doctor's office or when you go to get health care. I don't know about you, but if I were going in for surgery and right before they put me under, I looked up and the surgeon and all of her staff and everyone in the operating room, if no one had a mask on, I'd be really terrified. So there are areas in which we know that mask wearing is and should be the right thing. And I think we all know when we go in to see our doctor, we're going to have to put a mask on because we might interact with other people in the doctor's office who are not doing well, and the mask protects us. The other thing that I think is interesting about this is that wearing a face covering is really part of a broader set of everyday safety activities that all of us engage in on a daily basis. Things like wearing a seatbelt or obeying the speed limit are all things that not only protect you, but in the case of the speed limit, protect other people as well. I think the more we can make face coverings something more akin to everyday common sense measures, like obeying the speed limit, the sooner and the more easily we'll get to making it a norm.
All right. And Stephanie, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And the thing that I was thinking of that's similar is the no shoes, no shirt, no service norm that is pretty much accepted by everyone in terms of public health and is mainly enforced on the individual store level. And so for us to, you know, have those community norms and have those stores reinforce those values and the patrons as well, I think, is the way that it's going to change. It's just new right now.
Yeah. I'm going to go to Mary, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Mary. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thank you so much. I'm a retired nurse, and I live in Portland. I was out yesterday, went to a grocery store. There were people without masks on. Garbage in the carts, which makes me believe that they weren't wiped down. I ran into a gentleman who was going the wrong way in the aisle. He didn't have a mask on. I offered him a mask, and he yelled at me. So I'm finding it that even the people that do wear masks are wearing them improperly, and maybe we can do some education because they're not doing any good if the nasopharynx is all exposed. I mean, that's how the disease is transmitted.
Yeah, Mary, you're not the only person writing or calling in about that. Dr. Shah, what is the proper way to wear a mask?
So first, the proper way is to make sure that any part of your mouth that you could be breathing in or out from is well covered. That includes your nose as well as your mouth, and that the mask goes as far back, almost to your ears if possible, as you can get it to go. Now, some folks don't like wearing a mask or face covering. I get that. There are also the plastic face shields that everyone has undoubtedly seen. The face shield coupled with the mask is by far the best, but just wearing a face shield, which doesn't doesn't obstruct your airflow is an acceptable alternative, especially if you're in a situation where the nature of your interaction is just passing by someone in a grocery store. But certainly making sure that the mask is on properly is important. You know, to look at this on the bright side, or at least perhaps the optimist in me wants to look at it this way, the concept of wearing a face covering in the United States is one that is still relatively new. And so there's an equally optimistic way to look at this to say, gosh, given that this has only kind of been an idea that's been floating around our country and our state for a few months now, the fact that so many folks are already doing so is a positive thing. I happen to be living and working in Asia during the time when mask coverings became commonplace there, during the time of SARS. And it didn't happen overnight. And we shouldn't expect it to happen overnight in the United States either.
All right, Mary, thanks for your call. We'll go to Karen calling from Lewiston. Hi, Karen. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Karen, and thank you for taking my call. The girl informed me that this question has been discussed on this show before, but I've never heard it. So if the masks are supposed to protect other people from me, then why won't my mask protect me from other people? Dr. Shaw, please.
Sure. There are some very early studies, very early, that suggests that the mask not only protects other people, but also the wearer. I want to stress those are very preliminary studies, so hopefully we'll know more as science does its thing. But the reason why we know that masks are particularly good at protecting others is that the way the virus spreads is that it gets launched into the air when folks are coughing, sneezing, singing, talking at loud volumes. And so what the mask can do is prevent that trajectory from happening. Again, there are early data to suggest it can also protect you from inhaling the virus itself. But those data are early, and we don't know what the magnitude of that effect is. But we definitely know that it can protect the projectiles, it can block them before they leave your mouth.
Karen, thanks for your question. We are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of our discussion about face coverings or masks on Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Bristol Seafood's North Atlantic Shrimp, caught in the wild and available ready to eat in the freezer at your local Hannaford. By Broad Turn Farm, farm-driven floral design for weddings, special events, and home delivery. Details at broadturnfarm.com. And Trueline, a full-service marketing and branding agency who believes in the value of local, independent journalism. Online at wearetrueline.com.
On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
Bangor-born entrepreneur Melville Sewell Bagley died in Buenos Aires on July 14, 1880. Early in his life, he left Maine for New Orleans, where he worked in a dry goods store. In 1861, with the outbreak of the American Civil War, he immigrated to Buenos Aires and worked for a commission merchant. In response to a contest centered around the disposal of orange peels, Bagley created an aperitif and herbal-flavored triple sec that he called Hesperidina. Hesperidina was the first product ever patented and trademarked in Argentina.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Marshall Communications. Happy birthday, Maine!
The Maine CDC briefing on the coronavirus has now gone to a regular twice-a-week schedule on Tuesdays and Thursdays. On these 2 days, it will normally happen at 2 o'clock each weekday afternoon. Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page will all bring it to you live. In addition, the briefings are archived at MainePublic.org for later on-demand viewing or listening. Just choose the television drop-down. Again, Maine's CDC briefing with Dr. Shaw and others is now normally scheduled for 2 o'clock on just Tuesday and Thursdays each week and carried here on Maine Public Radio, as well as Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. We're discussing the many issues around face coverings and whether people believe in wearing them or not and why. My guest, Dr. Nirav Shah with the Maine CDC and Stephanie Kelly Romano with Bates College. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Atlee Riley. He is a managing attorney at Disability Rights Maine. Thanks so much for calling in, Atlee.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
You know, we've been talking about people choosing to wear masks or not, but there is a category of people who aren't facing a choice, who can't wear face coverings for specific reasons. Can you talk about what some of those reasons are?
Sure. There's people, especially individuals who are deaf or hard of hearing, who having others wear masks and wearing masks themselves can really significantly impact their ability to effectively communicate and engage in effective communication. There are other individuals due to a physical or mental health condition, that also can't wear masks. And even the CDC guidelines indicate that anybody who has trouble breathing or is unable to remove cloth face covering without assistance shouldn't, in fact, wear masks. So there are that is true. There are individuals that can't.
Yeah, and so I'm imagining this must be very difficult for some people because they feel exposed. I'm just imagining if I cannot wear a mask, yet going into a store and feeling as though people are looking at me as though I'm doing something wrong. I want to protect my own privacy. I don't want to have to tell everybody. I have one of the disabilities that you just outlined. What do you advise people in this situation?
Well, I think, where I'll start is really echoing something that Dr. Shah said at the top of the hour, and that is that we need to figure out how to accommodate folks who are unable to wear masks. And, I think what we're saying is we're going to be in this place for a while. And so public agencies, businesses, medical providers, they all need to be aware that there are some people who may need reasonable modifications made so they can have equal access to the goods and services that those entities are providing. And so that's really, it's really about doing an individualized kind of problem, taking an individualized and problem-solving approach and figuring out how you can deliver your services or provide equal access to them in another way.
Are you worried that people will take advantage of this knowledge in the same way that many people have taken advantage of the whole concept of service animals? That, for example, somebody will tell a store owner, oh, I can't wear a mask because I have a mental disability and be lying about that?
Yeah, that's a significant concern. And it's a significant concern to individuals with disabilities, many of whom may have underlying health conditions that put them at greater risk if they contract COVID-19. There were, and I'm sure folks are aware, these kind of fraudulent cards purporting to be from the Department of Justice saying they're mask-exempt cards, things of that nature. I think really the message is individuals with disabilities, just like many other folks, want to do their part to ensure that everyone stays safe in this community. And so when people fraudulently assert that they have a disability in order for reasons that I don't understand. It sounds like it's been a topic of the conversation on this show so far. It's certainly of concern to individuals with disabilities and everyone else.
All right. And Atlee, before we let you go, any words of wisdom to those of us who will be out and about in stores, in communities, about being with people who we encounter who are not wearing masks?
Boy, I'm not sure I'm qualified to answer that question, but I think with regard to individuals with disabilities, just get creative and take a problem-solving approach and figure out, are there ways we can use clear face masks or face shields, or for individuals having difficulty communicating, how can we ensure effective communication, maybe through speech-to-text apps or using notepads, or to some extent, could we use plexiglass barriers and stand at an appropriate social distance so that individuals can communicate effectively? Just to take an individualized and problem-solving approach when people are unable to wear a mask.
Atlee, thanks so much for calling in. Atlee Riley, an attorney with Disability Rights Maine. We're going to go to Anne, who's calling from Bar Harbor. Hi, Anne. Go ahead.
Hi. First of all, thank you both very much. And I have 2 points. One is, in my observations, our small businesses, who are so much on the edge right now, have been totally in the vanguard with mask compliance. Wonderful. Our Hannafords, which has been raking it in with panic buying, although they have had their staff comply, I feel they've been totally negligent about patron compliance, and their signage is really poor. So I was wondering whether there could be uniform state signage about masks. The other thing is, people were so worried about tourists coming, but I think what I'm seeing in Bar Harbor is that people, like I've seen people standing by cars with New York license plates, and they're all wearing masks outside, even before the state asked them to do that. And I think, in a way, people who are coming from away, from places that are hard hit, where mask wearing is totally normal, I think they're helping normalize it for us. So I just wanted to mention that.
Anne, thanks for reflecting your experience. And Dr. Shah, I'll ask you about her example about the Hannaford in Bar Harbor. Is there signage available from the state for stores who want that?
Well, the best signage that could be available is what's taken directly from the governor's executive order, which spelled out exactly under what conditions folks should wear masks and face coverings, and what stores may do in order to ensure that compliance remains high. So the best advice I would have is for someone, a store owner, small business owner, or a large business owner, is to go straight to the executive order. The governor spelled it all out there, and that could serve as the basis for any type of advice.
All right, Anne, thanks for your call. Anne was talking about how great the small businesses are in Bar Harbor. Jean here in an email writes, I want to commend the Lewiston Farmers Market for their creative strategies in putting a positive spin on mask wearing. In addition to offering masks for people who don't have one, those who come with their own mask are entered in a raffle, and there is a weekly Most Creative Mask contest. So thanks for sharing that with us, Jean. We're going to go to Jonesboro and Margie. Hi, Margie. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, I just want to say I was diagnosed in February with pneumonia, and I went just about a month and a half ago. I just begged my son and daughter-in-law to take me to Hannaford, and I put the mask on, the stuff on my hands and the gloves, and I couldn't breathe. And I picked up the bottom, and I was able to breathe with it on. But anyway, I heard some doctors were saying that you're pushing out the carbon dioxide and you're taking that back in. Is that true, that you're not taking only oxygen, you're taking in what you're letting out?
Dr. Shah.
I'm glad you raised that. That's been something that's been circulating on various different social media sites, and I'm here to tell you that it's thankfully not true. The masks, the face coverings that are most commonly worn, do not make you breathe in more carbon dioxide. And so long as you're able to breathe comfortably and carry on a conversation with the face covering on, you know you're really not putting yourself in jeopardy. Now, in your case, you had pneumonia, and there might need to be adjustments need to be made. But for folks out there, please know that you're not breathing in an excessive amount of carbon dioxide. If you do really want to think about that, what I think about myself is I remember that healthcare workers across the country wear masks during their jobs all day long, and there are not reports of healthcare workers suffering fainting spells because they're taking in too much carbon dioxide or anything.
All right. And Margie, it's nice to hear that you're feeling better now. Thank you for calling in. We're going to go to Vinny calling from Brownfield. Hi, Vinny. Go ahead.
Hi. We're having our annual town meeting tomorrow, and I've got the checklist guidance from the Economic and Community Development Department, and they don't make face masks mandatory. They strongly recommend it. However, at the meeting, of course, there'll be a lot of vocal attendance, people talking. They'll have to take the mask off. If someone does test positive from at the meeting, does that mean through contact tracing, everybody else that was at the meeting will have to isolate? And I want to thank everybody, the media and the state, for all the great job they're doing with all this presentation.
Thank you, Vinny. Go ahead, Dr. Shah.
Sure. So I would recommend in any type of situation where folks are going to be together in a room or any kind of tight space for more than just a couple minutes that every single person wear a face covering, even when they're speaking. Even though I know it seems a little discordant, that's when a lot of the virus can be transmitted. Now, you raised the question about what happens if someone tests positive in that situation. Yes, then probably most everyone in that area, given that it's a town meeting and it could go on for a long period of time, perhaps every single person who attended would have to be in quarantine. We would need to do a proper investigation. Of course, I can't speak definitively without knowing the layout of the room and such things, but it is possible that a large number of individuals would have to be asked to be in quarantine for a number of days, up to 2 weeks.
Thank you for that question. It's a good one, Vinny. I know Brownfield's not the only town that's going to have a town meeting soon. A tweet here from Caitlin. How should I clean or disinfect my mask?
Sure. So if it's a reusable cloth face covering, one that you purchased somewhere, a lot of main companies are now manufacturing them themselves. The best way to take care of that is to throw it in the wash as you would with your clothes normally. Most of them are made of really durable material, and the process of washing it in hot water with normal old laundry detergent will sanitize the mask and have it ready to go.
Okay, we're going to go to, we'll go to Nemo calling from Stu Ben. Hi, Nemo, go ahead.
Hi. First, I had a HBO installer here the other day. He didn't want to make a mask because he said it's only for the CBC to make more money for themselves, which kind of annoyed me. When I grew up, the only masked man was the Lone Ranger, and he was a good man. Third, in 1954, there was a show on Broadway called New Faces of 54. In it, Robert Clary at a masked ball sang to Alice Ghostly, both wearing masks, "Take off the mask, that's all I ask, take off the mask." She took off the mask. He started singing, "Take out the mask, put back the mask." She had a nose the size of a potato. Anyway, that's it.
Nemo, thanks for your call and your culture lesson today on Maine Calling. I want to go to Gail on Facebook, and I have a feeling what you're going to say. It says, Dr. Shaw comment about wearing masks in church settings. I heard that some churches require masks upon entering but allow mask removal during the church service. Dr. Shaw, is there a law about this? Is it just at the recommendation level right now?
Well, the executive order does contemplate any type of situation where, and this is the one from several weeks ago, not the most recent one. The one from several weeks ago contemplates any type of situation where you may be somewhere where physical distancing isn't possible, and that may include different worship services. There's an added risk that comes from things like worship services. Folks are usually attending those to be close to one another. That's what fellowship is about in many instances. And there's also singing, there's things of that nature that can also aid in the virus being transmitted. So even during a worship service, I would still wear that face covering.
All right. And I want to end with this email from Anne. She writes, "My sister died from COVID-19 on April 29th. She declined heroic measures and, despite receiving excellent care, was overwhelmed by the virus and died after 8 days. I lost my big sister, my best friend, my hero. I will wear a mask, wash my hands frequently, and keep a six-foot distance as best I can, to do all that I can to minimize the risk I might spread the virus to someone else. I will do all I can to reduce the risk of my spreading the virus so that someone else's heart is not broken by losing someone they love and care about so deeply. Doing all that each of us can do to reduce the spread of the virus is a matter of caring, decency, and compassion towards your family, friends, neighbors, and all our fellow travelers in this life." And thank you so much for writing that in today. And Dr. Shaw, thank you so much for joining us. I know we'll be hearing from you again in just a few minutes with your CDC press briefing. And Stephanie Kelly Romano, Associate Professor and Chair of Rhetoric, Film, and Screen Studies at Bates, thank you so much for joining us as well. Sandra Harris ran the board today. This broadcast will be repeated at 7 this evening. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.